This is Fresh Air. Saxophonist Joshua Redman is the son of saxophonist Dewey Redman, but it's not just Joshua's jazz lineage that's impressed jazz critics and fans. Last spring, when his debut album was released by Warner Brothers, critic Gary Giddens wrote, "The album is one of the most impressive debut albums I've ever heard. Redman is a tenor saxophonist of extraordinary promise, already mature beyond his years." On Joshua Redman's first album, he played with musicians of his generation. His new album is a companion session featuring some of the veteran musicians he most admires, guitarist Pat Metheny, bass player Charlie Hayden, and drummer Billy Higgins. From the new album, this is Redman's own composition, Wish. Joshua Redman, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thanks.
I think listeners who hear that you're Dewey Redman's son may assume that you grew up with him and, you know, played with him from a very young age. But in fact, you were brought up by your mother in Berkeley on the opposite coast from where your father lived.
Exactly. Yeah, and I hardly ever saw my father. I would basically see him whenever he would come to town to play music, which would be usually at the most once a year. So I had very limited contact with him. And he was we weren't close, but there were people also have to understand that there was no resentment. I never felt bitter towards my father in any way. I never felt like he should have been there. I never felt like he had shirked his responsibilities for me. I mean, I, you know, had great love and respect for my father, but he just wasn't a father to me so much as a musician that I really respected and a man that I respected.
How well did you know his work? Did you have his records in the house?
I knew his work better than I knew about just about anything else about him. I mean, that was the part of his life that I was the most familiar with because I had, if not all, I think I have all his records, and I had almost all of them as they came out. He would always send copies, so he was one of the first musicians that whose work I really became very familiar with.
So when you came to New York and started playing music, did you start hanging out with your father a lot more?
Well, when I came to New York, I started playing with my father pretty regularly in his group. I became a regular member of his quartet and played at the Vanguard many times with him, the Village Vanguard in New York City, and actually played in many other cities. And eventually in 1992, went on tour with him to Europe. So, I started to be around him a lot more because I started to play music with him more.
I want to play something from an album you recently recorded with Dewey Redman. This is called Formo, and he's featured on alto, you're featured on tenor. Mm-hmm. You want to say anything about it?
The record as a whole was one of, up till that point, it was one of my favorite records that I had been on because it was the first record, I think, that I did that actually represented a group that had been working together on somewhat of a regular basis before the recording. I'd done about 7 or 8 recording sessions before that one, but all those had been kind of like these throw together sessions, which a lot of the times is how jazz is recorded these days. You get kind of a bunch of name players together, rehearse them for a day if you're lucky, and throw them in the studio and tell them to make, you know, inspired music, which can happen, but the music is always the most inspired, I think, when it's the product of many months of working together and getting to know each other as musicians. And that's what this record was.
This is from the album Choices, Dewey Redman on alto saxophone, Joshua Redman on tenor. Joshua and Dewey Redman from the Dewey Redman album, Choices. Joshua Redman, your new album features Charlie Hayden on bass, Billy Higgins on drums, Pat Metheny on guitar. How did you put together this group?
I settled on this group because they had a very unique sound. There's a mood that they evoke as a rhythm section that is so different and so special, and something that I've never heard even approximated by any other rhythm section. Not to say that it's better, but it's just so different. And it was something that I felt I really needed to experience, and that I wanted to, that I didn't think I would have any other opportunity to experience except with them. You know, they really had a strong connection, partly because I think of they all had a really deep association with Ornette Coleman's music. I mean, Charlie and Billy were part of the original quartet, which came to New York and played at the Five Spot. Ornette Coleman is just, I think, Pat's number one musical idol. I mean, that's all he talks about, you know, a lot of the time. And he did do a record with Ornette. And the three of them, Pat, Charlie, and Billy, had done one record together called Rejoicing, which is one of my favorite jazz records. And so, you know, there's something that I think, because of that connection with Ornette, and also they all had a strong connection with my father, which was another reason that I kind of wanted. I thought it would be an interesting way to pay tribute to my father without actually having him on the record, because I didn't want to make a record with my father. I wanted to define myself separately from him, but at the same time kind of pay tribute to his influence.
Why don't we hear the first track from your new album, the Ornette Coleman composition, Turnaround?
Great.
Saxophonist Joshua Redman from his new album, Wish. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. Tenor saxophonist Joshua Redman is my guest. Your mother brought you up in Berkeley. She is a dancer and librarian?
She is a librarian now. She was a dancer until she had injuries. So she actually had injuries shortly before I was born. So ever since the time that that I was, you know, around, she never danced professionally.
So did you grow up in artistic circles?
Well, I mean, I didn't. Yes, I did. I grew up with art all around me. I mean, she was interested in all the arts, in music, in dance, in theater, in the visual arts, and exposed me to everything. I grew up financially very poor. We were on welfare. But culturally, I think I was very rich because she made sure that I was exposed to almost everything that I could be exposed to.
You went to Berklee High School. You played in the high school jazz band. You were also the valedictorian every class. So what took up more of your time when you were in high school, studying or playing?
Oh, studying, definitely. I mean, academics were always my first priority. Music was always, it's funny because music was always, in a sense, the most important thing to my heart, to my soul. You know, I mean, that meant the most to me, but it was never something I wanted to pursue as a career. In fact, I think I almost actively, fought against pursuing that as a career.
Did that have something to do with your father?
It didn't have to do, well, it may have had something to do with the information that I had about my father's life. In other words, my decision not to become a musician, or what I thought was going to be a decision not to become a musician, had nothing to do with the fact that my father was or was not a musician. But knowing that he had had such a hard life and that he was a great musician but had never been able to, you know, have the success that he deserved and never been able to support a family and had a very hard time just even putting food on the table, knowing how hard it was to be a dedicated, principled musician, knowing that from observing his life, I think that may have influenced me, away from a career path in music.
So what were you thinking your future was going to be?
I went through a lot of different stages, but by the time I was like a junior in high school, I was pretty set on being a doctor, a physician. I really wanted to be a pediatrician.
And you went to Harvard pre-med?
I went to Harvard pre-med, but that means that you only take the four required courses necessary to apply to med school.
When you got to Harvard, mm-hmm. was race much of an issue there for you?
It was more of an issue because for the first time in my life, I felt like there was pressure on me to make a choice between either, hanging with whites or with blacks. I grew up in Berkeley I'm from mixed parentage, and I always had friends from all ethnic groups, from all racial groups, and felt like I could float easily between them. I felt like there weren't as many rigid racial boundaries. And when I got to Boston and to Harvard, I really felt like there was much more kind of self-segregation among the different groups of students, and there was more pressure to make a decision.
Okay, so you graduate high school valedictorian, you go to Harvard on a scholarship, pre-med program, then decide you want to study law afterwards, mm-hmm. got accepted, I believe, to Yale.
Yes.
And then took a break, went to New York, played music, and never went back to academia.
Not yet.
After that. So what changed? You had decided you did not want the musician's life. You saw the trouble that it could be.
Yeah, I mean, I should say, in addition to my concerns about not being able to, lead a stable, have a stable economic existence with music. I mean, that was something that worried me. But there was another reason why I was very frightened, I think, about pursuing music as a career option. And that was precisely because I was afraid of what would happen to the creative spirit when it becomes kind of subordinate to the economic need. In other words, what happens when the thing that means the most to you spiritually and soulfully also becomes the thing upon which you rely to put food on the table, your source of income? I was afraid of somehow the creativity being corrupted by the professionalism. And that's something that I'm fighting with right now. It's very difficult to maintain that sense of innocence and freshness and inspiration about art when you're doing it night after night and you're working hard and doing interviews like this all the time and have not that much time to actually devote to your music. It's hard to stay inspired, to stay fresh. And that's one of the true tests of being an artist, being a good artist,
So what was the turning point when you decided you were going to stick with music and not go back to academia?
Right. Well, I moved to New York. I started playing a lot. I moved into a house with a bunch of musicians. I started playing a lot of jam sessions. I played around town some. I started listening to, I'm going to clubs all the time. And eventually, I was playing with my father, like I said. And in September of 91, I entered the Thelonious Monk saxophone competition. Kind of against my better judgment in a lot of ways. It was something that I did not want to do and entered it at the very last minute.
You didn't want to do it because you don't like the idea of a competition or?
I didn't want to do it because I didn't like the whole, there's something about the philosophy of a jazz competition. There was something that seemed, it was almost a contradiction in terms. There was, jazz is subjective expression, whereas a competition presumes that you can somehow judge people based on some formula of objective criteria, And, the idea that you can somehow place people's music in some kind of hierarchy and say his music is better than his or hers, that bothers me, So I had philosophical problems with it. I also had practical problems with it because I thought I just had no chance at it. So everyone was telling me to enter it, and I said, no, I'm not going to do it. But for some reason, and honestly, I can't really figure out why I actually did, but I just kind of on a whim at the last minute, prepared my tape, sent it in, and was accepted to the semifinals, went down and performed, made it to the finals, and ended up winning. And winning the competition brought me a lot of attention from everyone in the industry, and it also brought me a lot of attention, which was the most important thing. It brought me a lot of attention from musicians. And by the beginning of 1992, I began to get calls from people like Charlie Haden, Elvin Jones, Jack DeJohnette, and began, you know, John Hicks I recorded with, Paul Motion, began working and recording with these people. So basically, I became addicted to it. You know, I realized that it meant even more to me than I thought it would. And I also realized that I had been fortunate enough to been placed in a position where I could see a decent living being made out of, you know, out of being a musician. You know, I was making enough to survive and play the music that I wanted to play, which is more than a lot of people, you know, who deserve it, get. I mean, it's as much as I could ever ask for.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Joshua Redman's new album is called Wish. This is Fresh Air.